This is Canucks Only.
This is Canucks Only.
Here are your hosts, Shiloh Smith and Rob Young.
How's it going?
It's going good, man. How you doing?
Yeah, it's been too long, Shiloh, since we've talked.
Way too long.
Canucks.
Way too long.
Only. So, without getting into too much of a preamble, what's your thoughts on what's happening with Miller?
Oh, wow. I always pictured Miller sort of being that high-risk player who, you know, he always does those real risky plays, and he normally 3 out of 4 times is pretty successful with it. But when he flops that fourth time, it's like, it's horrible looking.
Right.
And that's just, and that's the type of player he is. He's this high risks, high rewards type player. And I think that's not the style that the Canucks are wanting him to play right now. When you go into a losing streak, when things are not going the way that you want, and production by other players is not where it should be, you know, there's that saying that you got to bring it back to the basics. And I don't think Miller plays basics hockey. So as he's, you know, struggling to find himself in this new sort of thing where they just want everyone to loosen up on the stick a little and, you know, calm down and bring it back to basics, he's not wired that way.
Okay, we're talking about Miller's performance. I'm just trying to think how, like, performance versus the noise. What's your take on the noise then?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been a lot of noise around Miller. Even when he was doing really good, there was still, you know, a lot of noise around him. And some of that noise came in the chants of JT Miller. But...
which are technically incorrect according to how Al Murdoch makes the call. But I'm just... it just bothers me when I hear it.
But...
not even the same tune, but that's an aside.
I think there's still noise out there. And sometimes, you know, if you want, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. For JT, I don't get the impression he's the type of player who would allow that to really impact his ability or confidence on the ice. He doesn't come across as the type of guy who really gives two flying whatevers to what people think. Especially people, well, more so people like, you know, fans and whatnot, right? He cares what they think. I don't think he cares if they're critical of him. It's just water off a duck's back for him. What I do think he would care about is people in-house, you know, judging his play and making comments about his play, especially when he's in a role that perhaps he's not fitting to. They're trying to make him play a style that's not what he's skilled to do or what he likes to do, then that might start to, you know, cause issues in his play as well as relationship wise, you know, with other teammates and other staff. So
are you talking systems? Are you talking, like, you said style of play?
Systems with regards to his style of play, right? Like, I don't think the systems that they're doing are ones that mesh well for what he is. And again, I've said it before, he is a high risk, high rewards player. He's the type of guy that goes out and just, you let him do his thing and it's either going to be extremely successful and he's going to get points on the board, or it's not. And you've got to have, you know, someone to back him up and solid defense because he just gave the puck away in the neutral zone type thing. Right.
Yeah. And I love Miller, like, a lot, but yeah, his execution and about 85% of amazing, and then 15% like, whoa, where did that go?
Yep.
So I know what you're talking about on that.
Yeah. So, and right now he's at 45% amazing, and, you know, and 55%. Oh, what happened there? And again, I don't know if that's because of the system, and he's just not meshing well to it, and he can't find that pace. I feel like everything is just being drawn back to the basics because they've had such a rough season so far that they're trying to get in control of play again. And Miller does not play like a player in control. He is erratic. And that's what makes him dangerous, and that's what makes him successful. But you got to be able to have the support to back up that. And right now, I think they're trying to, A, curtail him by holding him back, saying, no, don't go with your crazy stuff. We want structure in everything. I don't think they have enough skill in the back end to support him for when, you know, he gives those away and it's a 3-on-2, 3-on-1.
Do you think that Tockett's changed the system from last year to this year?
I think he's changed the system this year to this year.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I think the system's changed from what they were doing in the beginning of the season to, you know, I think it was about 20 games in. I could see that they were playing a lot. So at the beginning of the season, if you go back and watch, there's a lot of like two pass zone exits, right? Let's, like, you know, quick pass there, quick up, and then out the zone. After like game 20, they started doing this, and I'm going to say it's a system. I don't know if it is. Tockett says he doesn't like it. But I mean, if your players are doing it all the time, then that's your system. You know what I mean? Like, if you're coaching it or not, that's the system. But after about game 20, they started doing this fucking flip the puck up to the blue line. Give it the old backhand up to the blue line, up to center line, and then try and skate onto it. And that's not a breakout, right? That's we don't have confidence to make two passes to get it out, because they were failing on that,
right?
So if the recovery for not being able to make the pass was to change the system up and flick it out, that's horrible. And that's what they're still doing. If you actually watch, half their breakout is off the glass, off the boards, up the middle. It's not actually to a stick on the tape on the way out.
Going back to the beginning of this saga with Miller, which is November 17th against Nashville, he gets sat in the third period for the last 10 minutes. You, as a former, you know, good level player, what's your take on what it takes to bench a JT Miller for 10 minutes in the third? What do you think transpired for that to happen?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. He wasn't doing or achieving what the coaching staff were telling him or wanting him to achieve. And that could just be, did he get a goal in that game too?
Oh, I'll have to look it up. You keep talking, I'll look it up.
And that could just be that, you know, he's not doing, you know, what they need, and he's perhaps causing, you know, more turnovers or more chances for the opponents. But again, you know, that's not his style of play. He doesn't play safe.
No. He got zeros on the board.
He got zeros across the board? Okay.
PD scored, Ratu scored, and Sherwood scored.
Maybe it was PD I was thinking of, because he was in a slump too, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I think he wasn't achieving or doing what the coaching staff wanted, and that's really what it came down to. I mean, you can have a bad game and do everything right. You can be zeros across the board and do everything right in a hockey game. And that happens all the time. If you're being sat in the third period, it's because you've lost the confidence of the coaching staff.
Well, Tockett said afterwards he wanted people on the ice who he thought could win the game, which is a shocking statement.
Yeah.
From your one of your top three player.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think it has to be pretty bad for whatever had happened to that point. So that's back in November.
Yeah.
So immediately after that is the personal leave.
Yes.
What went through your head when that happened? I mean, a bit of this is rehash, because there's part of the problem is on even for Canucks Quest and the YouTube channel. I had nothing to say because there is literally no news. There's nothing to talk about because nothing's happened. He went, he went away, he came back, and he was still inconsistent. Good game, bad game, good game. So there's really nothing has changed, except that he went away for a long time. It was a calendar month that he was gone for under the quote of indefinite personal leave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a little unheard of. I mean, everyone feared the worst with family reasons. His wife had deleted her Instagram.
Yeah.
So there was all sorts of speculation. But that's what happens when you get no news from the club or the player.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially with Vancouver-based media, they're like a dog's on a bone at that point. So, yeah. You know, you're just asking for it. But what was your take? What went through your head when he took the personal leave?
I honestly was in that realm of must be family. It, to me, I didn't think that the relationship had eroded that quickly, that badly, that he was going to be put on to leave. So I his wife had just donated stem cells, or just had a stem cell donation thing done, and then, you know,
right.
3 days later after that, he went on leave. So I was sort of following that narrative of like, well, I wonder if like one of his kids has got leukemia, or one of his kids is sick or something. And, you know, now they're doing, you know, stem cell work with that child. That made more sense to me, believe it or not, which is funny enough, that made more sense to me than the fact that his relationship with the coaching staff had eroded to the point where he was indefinitely on leave.
To me, 100%.
That didn't make sense. I was just like, you know, yeah, he can have a bad stint and maybe sit him a couple, even if you sat him a couple of games, make him a healthy scratch. I'm like, I can see that, you know, trying to force his mindset. But to go on an indefinite leave, to me, that was like, I couldn't wrap my head around that being a hockey decision. That, to me, was a personal family crisis decision.
That would make sense. It would make total sense, you know, and the reason for the privacy, the reason for the no news, everyone's waiting for a shoe to drop on what it might be, everyone fearing for the worst, people saying mental health, people saying issues in the room. But, okay, so interesting enough, you used the word put on leave. So did at the time, were you under the impression that it was he was taking the leave, like he chose to take the leave?
Yeah, at the time, I believed that he chose to go on leave. So,
right,
because again, there's nothing to indicate to me that, you know, the team is going, all right, you're on leave indefinitely, right?
Which would make sense for a 10-minute benching. His head wasn't in the game. No points on the board. I don't see plus minus or on this stat page. I'd have to look. But it looked justified. Like there was something going on. He was distracted. It was taking his head out of the game, which for someone who was so typically emotionally and mentally engaged in the game, like it takes quite a bit to see a dialed out JT Miller. He's usually at least at 60-70% like intensity all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's almost always in that mindset. Like he's the type of player that you don't have to worry about him being mentally ready for a game typically, right?
Right.
That's why I thought it was more along that family issue, because to me that made sense, right? Like that's why his head's not there. That's why he's having these issues. Perhaps there was the benching and then the conversation after and him going, yeah, you know what? I'm going to take some time. Like, it just made more sense to me. I'm, you know,
and it still does. It still makes more sense than either the no news or now the trickle of what is coming out now. Okay, so let's fast forward. It's January 22nd. There's so much time since, you know, it's been 2 months, November, all of November, and then December.
Mm-hmm.
So that's two full months from November 17th of the Nashville game.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your take right now? Like, what is your conclusion, your deductions? What is your insight? What is your brain, your hockey experience telling you about JT Miller right now? Like, do you feel he's on his way out? I mean, what's your take on everything?
I still feel like he's playing against himself. And by that, I mean, he doesn't look to be doing what he naturally, when we look back at JT Miller, you know, having huge games, even in those huge games, you look at his giveaways and he'd have like 3-4 giveaways in a game, right? And and he'd have 5 points. So you kind of sit there going, okay, well, he gave it away a bunch, but look what he did. when you look at it now, he's got like, you know, zero giveaways, but he's getting like, you know, three shots or two shots on net, right? In the last five games, he's had what? He's had 3 points in the past five games. And I think, I'm trying to think, shots on net. I got the stat here. Shots on net, he's got nine. Nine in five games. So he's not, you know, in his last game against Buffalo, he had actually had four shots. So that's pretty much his most productive game in the past five games.
And what's interesting about the Buffalo game is I was there last night. There's two things. I was watching in warm-up. Miller was filming him or videoing for potentially his last game.
Mm-hmm.
But also just watching the warm-up. There was two things that were odd. I'm going to talk about the play first. There seemed to be a high awareness from Quinn, from Hronek, from some of the guys who break in the zone, specifically looking only for him on the breakout. It was really interesting. There was a couple options, and JT was doing his route with, you know, trying to curl speed. Mm-hmm. And even though he might not have been the best play, they tried to give it to him like most of the time,
mm-hmm.
especially with the guys who could make that pass out. And the other odd thing I noticed at the end of warm-up is that before, you know, the what do they call the exercise where all, you know, 15 guys are trying to shoot the puck on the goalie before they break for the room?
Yeah. I don't know.
But they did a weird thing. JT was off on the right wing boards. There was only one other player with him on a looked like a line rush or a board drill in the last third of the warm up, and he waited off to the side. I can't remember who passed it to him, but he passed the puck to Miller. He cut across. He did a little shot against Demko just to, you know, flip it on net.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all skated for they all broke for a skate, like all the rest of the team. They were waiting. I'd never really seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the warm-up. I've always, it's been one of my favorite parts of the game for decades. And so I've just never seen that before. It just seemed between that and then choosing to have him, you know, cannonball run the breakouts out of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of to your point about he's doing things a little bit differently. And then I wonder if the team is a little bit, I don't know if that was like, you know, something as a goodbye or, you know, like, who knows? I just noticed that it was different and definitely hadn't seen that before.
Yeah. I mean, between the extended leave and when he came back, let's even just go back to the Toronto game. So Toronto game, he really did. He only had 13 minutes on the ice.
Oh.
And this is a guy that typically plays 20 to 23, right?
Yeah, because I watched that on replay. I was keeping my eye on Petey because Petey had such a great game that
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't notice him, but I was watching for the things because I already knew they had won. So I was more watching for other things.
Yeah.
But that's a great point. I mean, so
he had 13 minutes on the ice. He only had two shots. And then against Winnipeg, he had 14 minutes. LA, he had 14 minutes. So, I mean, the amount of ice time he's been getting is a lot less.
Yeah. And, you know, it was most noticeable, I guess, or the most talked about was the Los Angeles game where his body language on the one goal was, you know, he wasn't moving his feet, stiff legged.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was the most criticized, but I didn't realize it was that few minutes before. That's great. A little bit of research there. It's frustrating.
Yep.
So what do you think is going to happen? So what's your prediction for, I mean, I hate predicting things.
Yeah.
I think it's a bunch of wasted energy, to be honest. But I mean, what's your take on Miller, you know, as of now, you know, evening of January 22nd?
Something needs to change on this Canucks team. And it needs to be huge because it's not just JT Miller. The entire team is not, you know, when Connor Garland is your best player in the past 10 games, you know, that's a problem. And I'm excluding Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes is probably better than Connor has been. But energy-wise, everything, like when you watch him play, he's pretty much been like the lead horse. And that's,
yeah. How does Garland and Kiefer Sherwood become your best forward?
Right. And so, you know, are they going to move Petey? Probably not. And probably not at $11 million. They're probably not going to get rid of Besser either because he's very well priced. And the only thing that's And, you know, the only one that's really having potential conflict with coaching staff, if you look at, you know, being sat and benched and who knows about this leave thing, but if that had anything to do with it, is JT Miller. And he is affordable to move. He's, you know, there's teams out there that can afford him. He's not overly priced. We'd be able to get a decent return. I think that they are seriously looking into what can they do, what can they get back to improve this team, and not just improve it on the ice, but also in the dressing room. Because I feel like there's no one in there who, you go back to 2010 team. You had the Sedins. The Sedins were the quiet leaders, right? You had Bieksa, who was the, you know, the very loud and boisterous leader, right? And the one that sort of, you know, a lot of people would say was the glue. You had, you know, Kessler was along those same lines, maybe not as quiet and not as loud, but definitely a key pit person in their Burrows. Like there was big personalities in there. And right now I look at the team and I go, the biggest personality we have is JT Miller. And he might not be the best of the biggest. That'd be like saying that, you know, Kessler was, you know, was the loudest voice on that Canucks team. How do you think that would have gone over?
Right. Right.
So there's no one to balance the room. So really, if they're doing this, they need to find someone who's going to be a leader. Right. And I'm not saying captain or lead the team, but someone who's a vocal leader, someone who's there to sort of tie that room together, can produce on ice, right? And hopefully can re-energize the team a little bit here. And that's going to be extremely difficult to find. You know, if they make a move just to move them, then the rest of the core might be looking at this going, well, now what? Like we didn't get anything to improve on in return.
Yeah.
So are they blowing this up?
Right.
And that's, and then, you know, now you got guys playing who are sitting there going, what's, should I, you know, be talking to my agent right now?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, they lost some character out of the room with Ian Cole.
Yep.
His name comes up often. Zadorov, they would have personalities. Well, Zadorov for sure, but Ian Cole, yep, sounds like he was a steadying influence in the room. But you're right. It's a quiet room. Quinn's a quiet captain. Petey's,
yep,
very,
and there's
quiet,
nothing wrong with
kind of introverted, it seems.
Yep.
No, not at all. And the thing is that I think that JT, I mean, potentially is way too loud for them, not a good fit. If Quinn was a little bit older, maybe he has more voice to drown out Miller's.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he carries a lot of weight in that room, but he is young, you know, yep, you know, 7 years difference between them. But yeah, you're 100% right. In any trade, you're not getting back an equal value for what JT Miller brings,
mm-hmm,
on the ice every given night between energy and talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sure will to want to win.
Yeah.
So 100% right. I mean, the trade, you know, you're not going to win that trade with the best player going the other direction. So,
no.
Okay. I would assume that your preference is not to trade Miller. That's my preference, is you keep it and you figure it out, but it sounds like it's gone way past that stage, which is completely terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it sucks. It completely just sucks and that just means that last year was a bubble year. Last year was a bubble hockey year.
Yeah.
Bubble playoff year.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So, you know, remains to be seen what's going to happen, but it seems inevitable that if he doesn't get traded, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, and I hope he doesn't. And I really hope that, I'd like to see us pick up another forward who can help balance the room, really. And also give him a little bit more of that energy on the ice. So, you know, even if it's Cole, right? Like, I'm not saying it has to be a ton of skill on the ice. We have a ton of skill on the ice.
Right.
What we don't have is we need a glue guy, you know? We don't have collusion on the ice. We don't have everyone, you know, no one's rowing in the same direction.
You lost my thought for a second. Oh, what's sad, really, at the end of the day, is that Tocchet post-Boudreau immediately had an impact on Miller,
mm-hmm,
in a super positive way, which is contrastly surprising that he's lost Miller.
Yeah.
And that potentially he's not. I mean, it's the results don't lie. The Canucks are having a terrible year. Now, there's been other factors, but Miller and Petey both not firing at the same time is hugely different from last year where everything was going right for us. But the fact that he, you know, Tocchet is playing him less and, you know, actually your point about how many minutes, I'd be curious if you go back further about how many minutes were since the Nashville game. Well, no, that's true. When he came back.
Yeah.
I mean, just before the Nashville game, I mean, it'd be a good little piece of research to see what his games per minute were and if there was a big noticeable difference for you could see there.
Yeah, see if I can find that.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, when Tocchet first came, he was taking, you know, sort of, I'm saying mid-season, but it was mid-season. And I think he just said, you know, JT, get out there and do what you do. Play some hockey. Get me results. Let's not overly worry about systems or what we're going to do. Let's just get out. You guys know how to play hockey. Go play hockey. I only want to work on this one thing in the back end because our defense was just atrocious, right?
Right.
And that 1-2 pass out of the zone type thing. And I think JT just got free rein. So,
okay.
That's my take.
Like, yeah, it would be interesting to go back and watch it. But Nashville, he played 11:41. I got his game log here on ESPN. So Nashville was the last one.
Yeah.
So his game, the game before Chicago was 17:15. The game before was 19:04. The game before was 17:36. So he was in the right realm between November 2nd to November 16th.
There it is. 11.
He was averaging about, I'd say 16. No, he was averaging 17 minutes a game. Easy.
Yeah.
A little above because some was 19 minutes. Some were back to 17 in a
minute. Yeah.
Actually, it's got the average for November. His average for November was 17:32, including the 11 minutes and 41 seconds against Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
In December, he averaged 17:45. So he actually went up in ice time, even though... So he's back to normal minutes there. And averaging for January, he's at 17:29. So not big dips, but against Seattle, he played 15 minutes. Against Toronto, he played 13 minutes. You're right. 14 minutes and 14 minutes against Winnipeg and LA. But everything else in December was, there was a couple of 15-minute games. Looks like they were having little shades of it there. So against Ottawa, Saturday the 21st. 15:36. Yeah. No, that's Vegas, and then 15:15 against Ottawa.
So yeah, I mean, he's got a couple of 21-minute games, and that's gonna bump those 15-minute games up to like 17. You know what I mean? For average.
Yeah. So I was looking for any big trends, but there are some little blips in there, but there wasn't any big telling signs that this was coming. It went from the Chicago game on the 16th. He was playing 17:15, 17 minutes 15 seconds.
But look at everything before Nashville, though.
Yep,
look at his lowest ice time before Nashville. 17 minutes. 16:20. There it is there.
Yep.
16.
No, that's actually part of what I was looking for is there's no trend. There was no information coming that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
So. Well, I mean.
What do you.
I think your.
Want to see.
I think your point. Oh, what I want to see. I want to see fix it. I don't want to see a team without Miller and Pettersson on it, even if they don't like each other, even if they don't feel like they can coexist, I'd put them on the line for three games in a row. I'd put them out there for 35, 40 shifts in a row and just work it out. Because you know what? Scoring changes things. Getting a nice pass changes things. Makes your bad feels go away, you know? After two or three nice goals, you're like, yeah, okay. You know what it's like playing on a team like that. And like, yeah, everybody wants to score. And that will fix things. Winning fixes things, right? So what do I want to see? I don't want to see Miller go. I think that this is a big step back for the franchise. I think it freezes our window and puts us a step back. I mean, miracles can happen. Look at the 94 trade of bringing Cortnell, Ronning, and Mimesso over and then going on a Cinderella run. It is possible.
Yeah.
But this feels like the reverse of that. This feels like the opposite. It feels like we're going to be the St. Louis Blues. And we're sending away, you know, to another team. Here you go. Yeah. Here's a gift box full of playoff players.
Yeah. To me, this feels like if they move them, that is the beginning of the end of this era of this Canucks, that they're going to have to do some other drastic stuff. They can still, you know, keep Pettersson and keep Hughes, but then, like, to me, everyone else, like, no one's safe, right? And it's like,
right.
Are and, we just
so it depends on everyone? You know, and on top of all the other things that have you know, stalled cap window season, Demko, Höglander, Joshua not on the third line. We're wasting another Norris caliber season from Hughes. Mm-hmm. We're wasting a very fun season of watching Kiefer Sherwood. Mm-hmm. We're watching, you know, even the great starts with Suter and Garland. But that aside, I mean, there's only the three people. And then Lankanen, right? Lankanen's been an unbelievable saving grace for all this. But that's a different podcast, different story. I am loath to see the end result of this other than, you know, keeping him and or deciding in this only to move him in the summer, you know? Yeah. So that's what I want to see. What are your thoughts on Elias Pettersson?
Oh, PD. He definitely, I don't want to say he's got some confidence issues because I don't think he's the type of player who's going to be not confident per se. But there is definitely some double, like, stepping, you know, extra thought. It almost looks like when you have a player who's, you know, JT's fits this same thing. When you have a player who's played a certain style and does a certain thing and we want to change that up. We want them to do something a little bit more different. If they haven't grasped the why, if they haven't grasped the what's the benefit, you know, why am I doing this, what's the benefit from doing this, and how do you really want me to get this done, if they haven't grasped those three concepts, they are going to be second guessing everything they do. When the puck is on their stick, they're going to be sitting there thinking, wait, okay, am I supposed to open this up to the next guy to get that shot? Am I just shooting, or are we still trying to get that open lane shot? And the second you think, you know, as the puck's coming to you, am I shooting or am I passing the open lane? You're sunk. Great. It's too late now.
Right.
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 Before that puck comes to you, you shouldn't even be thinking about what you're going to do. You should just know what's going to happen. It's like the puck's coming to me. I know I'm shooting. Puck's coming to me, I know I'm going for Besser on that far corner. There should not be a pause to it. And when you look at a lot of the things, a lot of the mistakes he's made, it's where he sort of, you know, the puck comes to him and he does like a tap and then a move with it. And it's almost like it's like, okay, no, that one.
Right.
He's shooting. No, I'm making the pass. And I question, is this systems? Because I go back to, you know, you look at the way that Miller's been played last season, the end of last season, where he sort of just had free reign, into this season where they've got like this structured systems, and Pettersson's almost the same. He was real quiet, obviously, at the end of last season, but that, I think, was due more to he had that wrist injury that no one knew about, or everyone knew about, however you want to look at it. But when he came back, it was like there was still a lot of just uncertainty in his play. And I'd like to think that if you're in the NHL, you should have the confidence to be able to play in the NHL. And to me, that means that it doesn't last this long. You're still doing what you can to score, right? To get points, to do what you got to do. What happens is when, if you're being told something different to what you want to do, and you don't understand why, or you don't believe in the why, then that's where you get that stagger. So I think there's something in the systems that just is sort of holding him back. And I mean, I'm not in the room, so I don't know, but that's what I see when I look at him playing.
So question that came up on X. Similar point, but your point about style of systems. Do you think and asked you earlier that they've changed to a system. And like, one, do you think they changed the system? You said you think so.
Mm-hmm.
Two, that this is maybe a more playoff-centric style that they're trying to instill in the team. And we are midstream of that because the system maybe did not work as well as I thought last year. It's the only thing I can think is, would make sense in thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, that does make sense. And that would you know, be in a, you know, you could sit there and go, okay, yeah, I get that. I see, you know, how that would impact everything and how that would address, you know, the style of play that's been coming out.
Right.
Yeah. I think, like, if you look at it, like, you know, even Garland seems to be has like the longest leash. And so I wonder if, like, you know, the leadership team is the ones that are like, okay, you guys got to, you know, you got to make the smart plays. You got to follow the system so everyone else tags along type thing. And I don't know where Garland is in the leadership. I wouldn't suspect he's, you know, up in the core, but yeah, I think they're trying to change the systems, or they have changed the systems. They're, you know, doing that. You're right. Go for the playoffs type of thing, but
there's no good results in the meantime. It's screwed with our team.
Yeah. Like, you still need the buy-in from everyone on the ice. Right. And if they're not buying into the systems, it doesn't matter. You know, if you got this awesome playoff, like, this will be great in the playoffs. If it's not executing now, you're not going to make it to the playoffs. So, I mean,
right.
They're out of the wild card right now, I believe, if I had to take a guess.
Yeah, they're outside. So with that sort of being said, how do you equate that with the winning streak on the road, that really good stretch on the road?
Yeah,
because we had results early. Lankinen went on a tear. There's, you know, timing wise and you know, enough games, enough pre-scouting on Lankinen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's bound to have a few bad games.
Yeah.
But, you know, the results, that's the problem, is there's no good telling results about either the system is working or they've changed or we're getting wins. It's been this mixed bag of everything, right? And mm-hmm. So maybe that makes sense with a Miller balking it, changing because it's not working for him. Maybe Petey's double clutching. But Petey for me is interesting. And so I'm curious about what you think about what you saw in the playoffs to the start of the season. And then from the start of the season up until maybe kind of, well, halfway, we're halfway through the season. So you can almost divide the season. In my mind, I'd love to review by the months, mm-hmm. you know, of what's happening to track the progress. But there's been so much that's happened that, it, you know, you're not even just tracking the team. You're tracking the drama. You're tracking this daily soap opera, what's happening. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? What was your assessment from the playoffs to start a training camp? You know, because, and then even let's check his game log for, I'll pull it up for the first month. But what's your take from playoffs to training camp, what you saw?
Playoffs to training camp, I thought he was injured. I thought he had either a wrist injury, but that wasn't my first guess, because he seemed to have lost his feet as well. So I actually thought he had like a chest, rib, something in that area injury. Because that's, if you get a rib injury, that affects everything, right? That affects your shot, that affects your legs, your skating. You know, everything you do is impacted by a core injury. So I honestly, right. I thought that's something that he was dealing with. It turns out he was dealing with an injury. Turns out he had that arthritis in the knee and he had the wrist injury from the playoffs. And then he had that arthritis or whatever that knee injury was early in the season.
Hmm.
It's interesting because his style of, like, he still looks like he's injured, to be honest. Like I haven't seen, there's been blips of like, oh, he's back. You know what I mean? We're like,
right.
You know, he just dominated. He was just, you know, I'm thinking of like, I think it was a Philadelphia game in end of October. I should bring it up. And he had like, I think he only had an assist, but he had like, I think he had like two shots, two hits. He had 2 minutes and penalties. Like he was just sort of, he had a stat in like everything. And it wasn't his best game. It was probably one of his best games on the face-off dots. I think he had, I can't remember what he was at, 60%, 50-something percent over 50.
Oh, I don't have that. I'm not sure.
But anyway, so, I mean, it was just like one of those games where it's like he was doing, and I was sitting there going, okay, well, it was a good pass, good assist. And then, you know, the next two games, he got more points. And, you know, and then you're sitting there going, okay, you know, and that's when they beat Pittsburgh. And I'm like, yeah, maybe he's back now. And lippity floppity, you know, go on a three or four game pointless streak, right? Getting like one shot a game.
Yep.
You know, he's been the most inconsistent player on the team this season. And I don't know why. And I think that's the most frustrating part, because we could say, you know, it could be systems. It could be, you know, injury or post-injury or confidence or, you know, but there's nothing that shows why he's been so inconsistent.
Right.
And even his play, right. Like he's, the first half of the season, he was, I don't know what the actual average is, but I'm going to guess he was averaging 18, 19 minutes a game.
Last year or?
No, first half of this year.
First half of this year.
Like October.
Well, November. He was averaging in October 19 minutes a game.
19, yeah.
Okay. Well, 19, November is 1937.
Yeah.
December is 1827, so it's gone down.
And so it'll go down again. January's
been 19 minutes, so a little bit back up.
A back up. Okay.
So the blip was January, but so far he's averaging 19 minutes. So no drastic storylines there far as like nothing you can see on the straight minutes.
And there's nothing, none of his stats are just like, it's when, if you actually look through, it's hilarious. It's just like, you know, mediocre, really good, really bad, mediocre, really good. It's almost like this 6-game cycle of, you know, 2 mediocre, 1 really good and 3 really bad games. And
yeah,
and it appears to have no rhyme or reason. Like it's so difficult to figure out. Part of me is also like, I'm sitting there going, should the Canucks be getting, you know, a hockey shrink in there? And
well, you know, I hadn't seen this pop up before, not with any great volume as far as his injury, because everyone's downplaying that he's not injured. But in Daniel Wagner's article in September before training camp, it says that Pettersson had to train around a nagging knee injury in offseason. You mentioned arthritis. It was actually tendonitis.
Oh, tendonitis. Yeah, that's what it was.
Right.
Thank you.
So inflammation of the tendons in the joint, which makes sense because on YouTube, I went through a sort of an analysis of like when he's shooting, he looks like he's in pain because there is no reason for a shooter not to shoot ever, especially when your shot is that good. When you have the next coming of, you know, I'm going to say Brett Hull because Brett Hull was like a powerhouse, but I feel that Petey is more accurate. I think his shooting percentage is probably higher than Hull's. I mean, I could be wrong. This is just memory from watching Hull play, but I haven't seen a shot like Petey's in a long, long time. Accurate, hard, beats goalies clean. I mean, it's elite. But him not shooting, it's like he must be feeling pain somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he said the knee, he thought the wrist. But even the first goal I think he scored in the Edmonton series in round two, he did a sweep. He did a sweep shot. And I thought, he doesn't do that all the time. But I went back and looked at his highlights from before. He probably scored 4 or 5 sweeping goals during the season, which I don't really remember because we always remember the howitzer, the big booming slap shot. And it's gone. You know, that version of him is gone. So there is so that was an article by Daniel Wagner, Vancouver's awesome. And then someone quoted Thomas Drance on Reddit about that Pettersson said that he's been playing with a bad knee since January, obviously of 2024. The longer it went, The more pain I felt, Pedersen said, it doesn't require any procedures this offseason, just time to rest. Well, it doesn't look like it's healed. It doesn't look like they've conquered the tendonitis, that there's still pain. Mm-hmm. So I think so he's fighting through it. So that's just, I hadn't seen that a lot. I mean, just Googling it now after you mentioned it, like, and there it is. So look, everyone's saying, you know, it's funny. Some people are like, he's the highest paid player in the league. And like, you mean the Canucks, but I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's obviously off. He's not performing up to levels. Neither is Miller, but it's not two wrongs make a right at this point. They're two separate issues. They might be combined. But so, I mean, that kind of sums up where we're at. I mean, we just, again, there's no news. There's nothing to actually concretely talk about because we're all just speculating, and that's terrible. Like, they should be a little more forthcoming if they want to quell the media here, which is, you know, rabid, you know.
And this is just my personal opinion. I don't know how anyone else feels about this. I'm sure other people will agree with me. The Sedins used to do this. I'm sure you remember. After a crappy game, should be Hughes, Petey, Miller taking all the media questions.
Yep. That's a good call.
You know, I think they're being too protected because they're not doing that great. And they need to have accountability. They need to be stepping out in front of us and going, well, here's what's...
And that should be an episode into itself because there's lots of comments to that effect about no one's asking hard questions. And when they do, they protect the people that don't want to talk. But people don't understand that journalists are supposed to ask those tough questions. They're not supposed to be in everyone's, you know, speed dial for drinks. They, you know, I know from working in TV and that, you know, that some of the TV people definitely get friendly and, you know, become friends because they interact with them every day. They're around them every day for 8 months of the year. I get it. But, you know, if you look what a journalist's job is supposed to be, they're supposed to keep people accountable. And it's so anti-social media for what, from news, hard news, and then sports reporters coming from news. That's their job because they would get held their feet to the fire if they didn't ask the hard questions, you know, one for ratings, but two actually to get information. So what do you do? So I would imagine if you think Miller's going, that PD stays, is that your take?
That's my take. They're not going to be able to move both of them.
Do you think they could move both of them?
No. I don't think they'll be able to move PD with his production. I mean, let me rephrase that. They could move both of them,
but right.
Be like it would automatically be a loss because we would have to probably eat a ton of salary from Petey.
No one, which actually accomplishes nothing.
Yeah. And then no one's going to be like, we're not going to get back that level of talent.
Right.
We might get four or five players back and they might be good players. They're not going to be that talent. So I mean, if that's what you're doing, you're basically blowing up the team, you're tanking it hard but there's no one in the draft for next year that's like phenomenal. So it's not even a good year to try and tank.
Well, you're wasting Quinn Hughes at 25. You got to wait for an 18-year-old to develop.
And you're going to need someone that's 2 or 3 years.
You need two, 3 years for an 18-year-old to develop unless you get lucky, unless you get first, second, or third overall. Yeah, you just don't win that. You can't. No. It means you're doing a slight reboot.
And do you really want, because like I said, if Quinn Hughes is watching all this go down and now he's thinking, you know, hey, how close am I to be free agency? And, you know, look where my two brothers are playing right now.
I know, right? Well, there's one trade I would go for is Miller for Luke Hughes. You're buying
for that one.
You're investing in Quinn Hughes currency of enticing him to stay. Yeah, you don't win those trades when you're sending the best player away.
No.
And that's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, I know we talked a little bit earlier today by text and this is only something that came about. It's Wednesday, Tuesday, just before I went to the game yesterday. Mm-hmm. Had you heard anything? I mean, because now we've talked about Tockett and Miller, but had you heard anything specifically until I had mentioned it on text today about Tockett and Miller? that that was the issue versus, because we've heard it's Petey and Miller, it's Miller and Petey. No. They don't get along. There's problems in the room.
No, I didn't.
But had you had heard anything about talking? No,
I hadn't heard anything of there being, my understanding was that the two of them got on good.
Right.
I had not heard, I heard everything that you're just saying, right? It's all, you know, Miller and Petey, it's, you know, they can't play together and they're not getting along, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing there that was like, Tockett and Miller aren't on the same page. And I mean, it's funny because now that we look back, because I mean, that's why, you know, we sort of look back at a bunch of this, the stats and the things that we were looking at in regards to Miller was really around the those decisions by Tockett. So now it begs the question was like, okay, so perhaps their relationship wasn't as nice as everyone thought. And, you know, maybe it was definitely a more Miller and Tockett than Miller and anyone else.
Right. And so I saw two tweets yesterday that made me do some digging. I haven't found the exact sources, like the actual clips, but the one tweet mentioned the conflict is between Miller and Tockett as per Farhan Lalji and Nick Kyprios, two separate sources. So one from TSN, one from Sportsnet in Toronto, two sources. Then I saw a second post that said management made him take the leave. And I was like, so I need to substantiate that. But I think those are very important details if they're true, which changes the huge narrative that we've been sitting around since November. And all of the, just the maelstrom of speculation that Miller and Petey, Petey's not playing good because, you know, Miller's yelling him too much or whatever the scenario is. But I mentioned it earlier, but if Tockett has lost Miller, then it is done.
Mm-hmm.
Then Miller is on his way out. Because let's think about this logically for a second. That's all right. Let's think about this logically for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to write that down. How do you send a player on leave? You got to go through management. So this has had the blessing of management.
Yeah.
So let's talk about February 17th, Miller gets benched. 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You would imagine that that warrants a conversation from Alvin down to Tockett, that you're going to bench one of your star players. And then you said you're calling him out, that he's not on the ice because he's not someone who's going to not give him a chance to win. That's a pretty strong statement. Now, let's suppose that Rutherford and Alvin are talking to Tockett. Maybe it's the next day. And they say, what's going on? So Tockett could say anything, but at that point, he's probably saying something like, hey, well, he's not doing what I'm asking to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat him, which seems like a reasonable thing.
Yeah.
So then if I was the GM and or Rutherford, I mean, you'd say something, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to sit him a game?
Mm-hmm.
And Tockett probably said something like, and this is just me walking through a mind scenario that if I was a fly in the wall, I'd say, yeah, sure, a game or maybe a couple of games.
Yeah.
Because whatever it is, Tockett's not happy. And so, but then that creates a problem for Alvin, and Rutherford's like, well, what are we going to tell the press? Then something like, well, what if we send him a whole bunch of games? Like, what do we send him on a leave? You know, like you could see the logical train of like how this had to have happened to let him take an indefinite leave of absence, which amounted to 10 games, I believe. It was a full calendar month. That, you know, with no information, with no date of return, everyone's guessing. It goes to family issues, mental health issues, personal conflict, but never came into the coach conflict, which is very interesting. So that was successful. That if that actually is true,
and that makes.
But this had to go through Alvin and Rutherford.
Well, yeah. Once you say leave, that is going through.
Because it's not an insurance thing.
Nope.
Do they have to enact insurance? They would have to have some evidence, medical evidence, doctor examination, mental health examination to justify the insurance. So they just paid him for all those games to be away, which is also very huge. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So my take is on it that it's unfortunate, but I don't want him to go, but I think Miller is going. And that's, for me, a giant step backwards from last year. I mean, we looked to build on it. We haven't even built on that. We've had like two good games all year that resemble anything like we played last year.
Yep.
So that's my take. So, you know, it's an hour. We've talked for an hour. We've talked and maybe people have listened to this, but I think this has been a bit of therapy. I've been sitting on this for too long. We haven't done an episode for long enough. So do you have any final thoughts that you want to add to this?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think if there is a big move, like getting rid of Miller, I would really be interested to see sort of the shockwaves, because there's one of two things that's going to happen. It's going to re-energize the room somehow, and they're going to turn around and make connections and reconnect and do really well. Or it's just going to sour the room further, and it's going to cause more divides, more issues, and we're going to see this team starting to tank even harder. They're doing more individualist stuff. And it all depends on the take. I mean, the players might turn around and go, you know what? Screw management. Let's show them we're not happy about that.
Right. Yeah. Could have a double backlash. Media, fans, and in the room.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Hey, has anyone told you look like Horonic with your current beard and
no?
All right. Well, let's wrap it up for this episode. We'll save another topic for another day where we can talk each other's ears off. Maybe we'll talk about Brock Besser and his contract.
Yeah. Now we can talk about goaltending. Sure. Maybe.
Save C loss for another day.
Yeah.
And Demko.
And Demko.
Definitely.
Okay. Great, bud.
Okay, Shiloh. Good to talk to you. We'll talk to you next time.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to Canucks Only.